Welcome to CRE Tech Talks. This podcast series is brought to you by Building Engines, providing web and mobile property management software to innovative commercial real estate owners, managers, and the clients they serve for over 14 years. And now, please join our host, the man with more hot air than the MetLife blimp, Building Engines Senior Vice President, Scott Sidman.
Thank you again for that warm introduction and welcome to this episode of the CRE Tech Talks program. Again, I am your host, Scott Sidman. We are going to talk today about the state of mobility and a little bit about what's coming next. Mobility and mobile applications have been one of the catalysts for what's been referred to as the CRE tech revolution that's taken place over the last several years. And while perhaps other things like big data and crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, and machine learning might be getting some of the buzz right now, mobility and the ability to work and have access to information wherever you are is really fundamental to all of those things and all those new tools that are coming out in the marketplace. So we thought it would be helpful to take a look at the state of mobility, the current state of mobility, and hear some thoughts on the future. So to help us with that, we have with us today a longtime friend of Building Engines and the person who actually helped set us on our mobile application path years ago. Matt Brogy is the COO of the mobile field rep product called Repsly, as well as the former founder and principal of mobile consulting firm Mobility CIO. Welcome, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Scott.
So let's jump right in by having, as we always do and always ask our guests to, tell us a little bit about you and your background in mobile applications, how you got started, and as always, again, to share one unique or unusual fact about yourself for the audience.
So I started my career as a field service technician supporting mini computers and peripherals in the Northeast, working for Wang Laboratory. And at the same time, I was going to school at Boston University for computer science. And I became interested in mobile technology as a tool for field reps back then. That was very much at the beginning of mobility as it was in the mid-80s when that was going on. And from field service, I moved into sales and then program management for some very large-scale mobile development projects. The company that I was working for at the time, 11 Technology, was doing these huge projects, global scale project for thousands of users for Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Pepperidge Farm, and the like. These were very large-scale, multi-million-dollar projects for organizations with offices all over the world, and it gave me some really deep insights as to what was going on with mobility and some of the challenges that are facing me putting together a big enterprise-scale mobile application. And then after that, I moved on to work as an independent in the mobility space. This is where I formed and founded Mobility CIO. I consulted to several software companies that were looking to extend their core enterprise products out to the field, and eventually connected with Repsly, where now I'm the COO, as Scott mentioned. As far as a unique or unusual fact, I'm an avid disc golfer. Some people know that sport as frisbee golf. And being up here in Boston after 110 or 115 inches of snow, I'm really excited that we finally have some weather that's going to let me get out on the course again.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. And given how my golf game is going these days, I think I may have to transition to disc golf. It looks like it's, although I don't know if it looks easier, but it looks like it's something I might want to take up. And great to, you know, for people outside of New England, it's may not be a name that means a lot, but Wang Computer is one of the foundations for a lot of tech companies here in the space. So certainly a great background and foundation for you and all the stuff you've done. And how is that translated into what you're doing now? Why don't you give us some background on Repsly and a little bit about how it started and the product and how you apply it?
Sure. So, you know, since I started as a field service rep for Wang, my view of mobile has always had a really strong end-user component. I always look at things from the end-user side. And that's probably how, you know, Wang was a great company during its heyday and built a very strong foundation for a lot of the things that I've carried forward. But that field experience, I think, is probably one of the most important things that I gained while I was there, and it shaped a lot of the thinking and a lot of the work that I'm doing today. Here at Repsley, Repsley is called Repsley because it's software for reps. It's mobile-based, cloud-based software for field teams. We say that we simplify field team management by providing very, very simple to use, simple to implement solutions both on the mobile side and the cloud side that the managers use. And we optimize the execution of all kinds of field work and manage the data that's generated by those people in the field. So Repsley is really designed for small to medium-sized field teams. We're kind of optimized for, you know, if you've got 40, 50, 60 people out in the field doing any kind of work. We've got people that do pool maintenance, people that do landscaping, people that do merchandising of beer, one of my favorite ride-alongs to go on. And then, you know, really anything you can think of, salespeople out in the field, anywhere where there's teams of people in the field that need to be connected to data and need to collect data and report what they're doing back to their management.
Perfect. And certainly you can see possible applications and extensions out into the real estate space in terms of vendors and the people working on properties and buildings and those kinds of folks as well. Is that accurate?
Sure, absolutely. So really anybody, as far as Repsley is concerned, any field person, field technician, field rep, field sales agent that that visits a set of locations on some recurring basis to do some work. So it can be people doing inspections, people doing standard maintenance and repair, people that are doing ad hoc repair or servicing things. So it does have a lot of applications in that space as well.
Great. Well, good to hear, and it sounds like you guys are doing off to a great start, and it's been a few years now, and I know you're growing, and certainly a good product that people may want to take a look at. Let's talk kind of in broad terms now and get into where we're at in mobility and kind of the evolution of mobility and mobile applications for the enterprise. What are your thoughts in terms of the life cycle and where we are today?
Yeah, so you know, I mentioned that I started at Wang close to 30 years ago at this point, and mobile was really just getting started. So I've seen the whole evolution up to where we are now, and you know, we've come a long way, baby. Is kind of what I like to say about it. What used to be hard to use, hard to maintain, custom built tools for specialized workers, which is what we were using back in the day. Has really evolved quickly and much more quickly over the last few years to be very easy to use, if not even fun to use, tools that are a manageable part of every worker's tool set. So not just specialized solutions that, you know, have difficult user interfaces that provide a point solution, but really tools for everyone. Because of the rapid evolution of these super powerful, super easy to use smartphones, and the fact that everyone from, you know, my grade school aged kids through people in retirement use smartphones in their personal lives. There's a new standard now for what people expect from the mobile tools that are available to them at work. Not that long ago, you know, when people had flip phones or feature phones or even before then, you know, there was no expectation for what a mobile app should be like at work. And when people were using flip phones and feature phones at home, you know, they had some expectation, but they didn't have a lot of they didn't expect applications to be creative. Now the bar has really significantly been raised. There's this whole movement in software, particularly in mobile software, called consumerization of enterprise applications. So applications that used to be, you know, you would look at it and from 100 feet away you could tell by looking at the screen, oh, that's a business app. Today, when you look at an app on a phone, if you're using it for business, you really can't tell unless you know the app. It looks like a fun, easy-to-use, colorful, easy-to-engage-with application. So that's probably the thing that has evolved the most over the last few years is this consumerization because users are expecting, and you know, we can probably swap out the word demanding. They're demanding that their apps are as easy to use at work as they are, you know, at home. They're easy to understand. They have bells and whistles and integrations to things like their calendar and things like that. Maps, they expect that they're able to see things on maps, that they can do instant messaging through their mobile apps. And if they if the apps that they're using in the business place don't have these kind of features or this kind of user interface, it becomes a disappointment, which then turns into, you know, reduced adoption and ultimately a loss of value to the enterprise because their applications aren't as easy to use and fun to use as the other apps that people are used to.
Sure, yeah.
I just wanted to add, so given all that, enterprise mobile application providers and the enterprises themselves have a great opportunity to leverage that, the demand that comes from these educated, mobile workers, the people that are educated about how to use mobile technology. They already know how to use a mobile camera. You don't have to teach them how to use that. They already know how to interact with lists of data, and they know how to swipe it and do things and manage the device that they're using. So training costs are way down from what they were even a few years ago. Yeah. And because the workers are they're already predisposed to using the mobile technology, it gives enterprises the opportunity to do creative things with it and to push it out farther and farther and deeper into the organization, and therefore be able to leverage the benefits that you get from mobile. In the past, in the not-too-distant past, actually, it was always a huge project to roll out mobile. And now it's really, it can be as easy as sending an email to your mobile workers saying, click this link and download the app on the other end of this link and start using it for X, Y, or Z.
Right.
Where that wasn't there before. So there's been and where are we in that whole process, which I think was the beginning of the question. It always feels like we're at the end, like, wow, this is as good as it's going to get. But because things have been turning over so quickly and to such a degree, every 6 months or 12 months there's some major new thing that's happening in mobile. It's hard to imagine that we're anywhere near the end of, all the benefits people are going to get on the mobile and the enterprise level.
Wow. Well, I think we'll talk a little bit more specifically about some of those things you're seeing in a little bit. One of the things I want to jump back to is that consumerization effort kind of was the impetus or created the demand within the enterprise for the BYOB movement, bring your own device movement, BYOD, not BYOB. You can see where my head is at. We're not yet at Friday. BYOD movement a few years ago. Where are we right now from your experience and what you're seeing with your customers in terms of bring your own device or company provided devices?
Well, we see here at Repsley, we see probably 90% of our customers are following that BYOD path. There are a few that still use company provided devices, but it's a thing that's fading. However, I do feel that in many, many enterprises and many applications, there is a need for it. There's, there's some key things to consider when you're evaluating whether or not BYOD is for you or not for you. The basic difference being, who owns the device, and whoever owns the device is responsible for the device, not just, from an insurance perspective, but managing the device, managing the applications, managing the security. So, the first real question is, does the application that you have or does the application that you need and the functionality that you need, does it run on all of the devices that your mobile workers will be carrying? One thing that people sort of take for granted is that everyone has a smartphone, but that's not necessarily true. Quite a few people and very large percentages of people have smartphones, but it's still far from 100%. So first, you have to make sure that if you decide to go BYOD, that the workforce is going to have the infrastructure that they need in order to do it. And they're all different kinds, Android, iOS devices. There are still BlackBerries out there. And Windows phones, people have discounted Windows, but they keep maintaining, 3-4% of the market. Mm-hmm. And in some demographics, it's a lot higher than that. So make sure that the applications that you want run on those BYOD devices before you commit to it. And then the other main concern that people have about BYOD is the security. The device itself, you can buy your entire team iPad or iPhones or Android devices. The device itself is still the same, but who manages the encryption on that device and the separation of data between personal data and company data. Who puts the firewall on that device and manages that? If it has to be really secure, if your data has to be really secure, it may make more sense to take that control of those devices in-house so that you can, you know, enforce putting things on the device that will lock it down if it's lost or wipe it if it's lost and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that people think about, you know, are who pays for the service? How do you split the cost? How do you reimburse your workers for, you know, the bandwidth that they're using for work things? You have to consider that as well. And then related, I guess, to some of the other topics is the support piece. You know, if a user calls you, calls the support line and says, I can't connect to the system, is it a problem with your software or is it a problem with some settings that they have on their phone to make their phone work on their home network, for example? And there can be higher support costs in the BYOD space than in the company-owned space as well. So you put all those things together, you know, there's no single answer that says BYOD is good for you or you definitely shouldn't do BYOD. But there are some things, you know, to consider. And again, most of them are going to revolve around the security that's required for the data and who's going to take responsibility for managing that security on those devices.
Right. That's great insight. And I think that's what you've led to is understanding the questions to ask, right, as you consider those things. And those are some good ones to consider. It seems like we're asking our phones to do a lot. Are we running into limits? Are you seeing anything in terms of the number of things that we're asking the smartphones to do with all the different applications, both personal and business related?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, it's a problem that will really never go away because, you know, in my opinion, there's three major components to how much a phone can do, how fast it processes the information, how fast can the information move from the phone back to some servers or between the different devices, and then how much can you store in one place. And there's constant progress being made in all three of those areas. You know, we went from 3G to 4G to LTE, and, you know, now there are faster networks out there. There are phones with, you know, two dual processors that are running at multiple gigahertz, things like, you know, we paid $10,000 for a desktop 3 years ago that has the power of a phone that basically pick up for free today.
Right.
And then storage, you know, they're, My Android phone has an SD slot in it, and I can put in 128 gig of memory if I want to put it in there. So every time an advancement gets made in one of these areas, you know, the applications very quickly take advantage of it, and then the next area becomes a bottleneck. A really good example is video. So 2 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, the big problem was photos. You know, you have a camera on the phone, and you're taking 3 megapixel and 6 megapixel photos, and then it went to 10 megapixels on a phone. Mm-hmm. And you're taking those pictures and you're trying to move them up to the server. And that was a problem. But, you know, now you take a picture with a, you know, a 14 megapixel photo and you don't even think about the fact that it has to go somewhere. It just goes. But what's filling that void now is video. Originally, you know, some of the consumer applications for video would limit you to 6 seconds, 7 seconds of video, like Vine, for example, and the little Instagram videos that people make. Mm-hmm. But for business purposes, having video on your phone is can be a really good feature. But video takes a tremendous amount of space. For no video, if you wanted to put a training video on somebody, push it out to their phone, it can take, you know, 10 minutes. I'm sorry, it can take 10 gig or 20 gig. Of space. So that becomes kind of the next challenge and the next bottleneck. And we'll constantly ask our phones to do more depending on what's coming. I'll give you another example. There's a lot of work right now being done in video analysis and photo analysis. And really the only way that's possible to make it work right now is if there's a mobile requirement. For example, a guy going out taking a video from all angles of a piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
If you could conceivably build a solution where that video gets analyzed automatically by a computer, and it identifies the things that need to be repaired on that piece of equipment. Maybe it recognizes a meter reading or a gauge reading, or recognizes the serial number as you videoed past the serial number of the device, or just recognizes what piece of equipment that is and what model it is, and it can do database matching and find out, you know, what service needs to be done on that particular device without a user ever having to input anything, just pass by a video. But that processing itself is very, very intensive, and right now, even on fast computers up in the cloud, it takes, you know, a few minutes to process that that video. So the way that it will work today is a rep in the field, a technician in the field, would take this video and then pass that video up to a server where the processing gets done, and then a few minutes later it'll come back and get that data down to its phone with the suggested work that needs to be done. I guarantee you that as soon as, you know, a 10 gigahertz phone with quad processing power, which, you know, eventually we'll get to, comes out, people are going to be demanding that that processing happens in 30 seconds on the phone.
Wow.
So there will always be a bottleneck, right? Yeah. There will always be some bottleneck, and it will be driven by the how aggressive you want to be with features and functions in the application.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there's a little bit of a responsibility on the end user as well to understand some of the things that might impact the application performance on their phones. I mean, I think we all learned at the beginning that every time you open a browser, you have multiple browsers open, and that may have an impact on running different applications. So are you working to try and educate your end users about those things, you know, while the technology catches up a bit?
Sure. You know, that's kind of tied to the BYOD situation. If you're asking your reps to use their own phone, if you're asking them to use their own phone, mm-hmm. then you probably are on the hook to provide them with education on how to manage that phone better. If you make it a choice, and there's quite a few organizations that give their users the option, you can use your own phone, or we can issue you a phone. If the user says, no, I want to use my own phone, I only want to carry one phone, I like my phone, I don't want to go using that silly Android thing because I'm an iOS user, then it's really on their responsibility to make sure that things are working as well as they need to work. There are always, right, there's always probably the biggest thing that we see, and it's really been an issue for a number of years now, is the battery life of a phone. And educating people on what can you do to keep your battery going all day and not have to plug in somewhere at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of things, it is important. End users do carry a fair amount of responsibility on their to manage those things on their phone.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Connected to all this is connectivity, right? So, you know, where are we today compared to a few years ago, where we're going in terms of applications and infrastructures and, you know, connectivity out in the field and the importance of offline capabilities and how you evaluate all that, both, you know, as an end user and as a deliverer of the application?
Sure. So connectivity technology can always be an issue. So the first real question that somebody needs to ask themselves is, do I need to have an application that runs offline, or do I need to have connectivity? And if the answer is, you know, that you need to have connectivity in order for your app to provide the value that it needs, for example, if there are, like this example that I gave about video processing or photo processing, or even if there are some databases that are on some server someplace else that you need to access to look up information while you're in the field, if connectivity is an issue, then, you know, you have to think hard about that because connectivity is not always there. We're doing better than we were. It's something that always gets better as far as coverage goes, and will continue to get better both from a bandwidth perspective and just from a coverage perspective. The cell towers, you know, constantly going up, and because we have great competition in that state, here in the state, the coverage will continue to get better. But there are still holes, for example, out in the field between, if somebody travels from one building or one campus to another building or another campus, there's not much you can do. You're at the mercy of the cell provider. There are things that you can do on your own, within your own buildings or on your own campuses. There are better and better cell phone or cell signal range extenders, wireless hotspots that you can put and build a good network so that you can get access to the network when you're in the basement or when you're in other areas of campus that might have poor coverage typically. But it's still not perfect. And, there's other things, too. People have to be careful with their expectations because they might hear things or read things about just extending the network. There's been, I believe it's GM now, is putting Wi-Fi hotspots in all of their pickup trucks. And so you think, I can drive anywhere I want. I can go out to the mountains, go fishing, and have Wi-Fi. But reality says that Wi-Fi is Wi-Fi. It provides Wi-Fi. It does not provide the Internet itself. So you still need cell coverage to that Wi-Fi hotspot in order to send the Wi-Fi signal then to the devices that you want to connect to it. So you have to be careful with what you hear and what you expect. The coverage still isn't perfect. It is better, and like I said, it will continue to get better. I think, though, that there are more and more what we're seeing is the mobile technology itself and the mobile development platforms, development languages, are making it easier to write applications that don't have to be connected all the time, that can function quite well while they are disconnected.
Right. But the first step, as you indicated, is really understanding what your needs are, right? So if you need the constant connectivity, that might change how you evaluate a particular provider or application versus someone who can live with the offline without being connected all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think in the building space, the example that I always like to talk about is, a building engineer who has to go to the basement. How many people think they extend Wi-Fi to their basement? They probably don't.
Right.
He goes down there and wants to see, what is the history of service on this piece of equipment that I have to repair. Who was here last? What did they do last time? Was fixed? When was the last time that the filters were changed? That data might all be stored somewhere on a server. If you're running a pure web-based application, which has a lot of benefits from one perspective, but still has kind of poor performance from a bad connectivity perspective. If that guy needs that data, he has to walk upstairs, get the data, and then walk back downstairs, and he's completely shot any productivity gains he would have gotten using that. So, but if you have somebody who's more of a, in management, and they spend their time on the floor and the lobbies and visiting, with tenants in the building, they're probably always going to be in some sort of building Wi-Fi coverage or in some cell coverage. That application may not need to have as strong a requirement to run offline. So it is very much dependent on understanding what is the business problem they're solving and what are the scenarios that the user is going to be in as they're trying to use the application.
Right. And that's a great example, perfect way of explaining it so that people can see what the question is there. So let's talk a little bit about what's coming next. You alluded to it at the beginning when I asked you the initial question and where we are in the evolution of things. But are there big innovations coming, or are we, with mobility, are we in a period of incremental improvements and continued extension of desktop applications? What are you seeing?
There is quite a bit that's on the horizon. It's actually pretty exciting time right now. I mentioned the image and video analysis and recognition. I see quite a bit, happening there. And that's really, if you think about it, it's really coming from innovations that have happened in the consumer space with think about Facebook tagging friends in Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now Facebook recognizes those friends, so a lot of facial recognition. And that technology has really been extended now so that, computers can recognize all sorts of things by their shape and their colors and their textures, and it's getting better and better. And the better it gets, and the faster that processing is able to happen, the more we'll be able to use that on the fly in the field. So we've got an example in some of our customers. It's not really related to buildings, but it might make the point. There are customers, there's people that wear a camera mounted to their shoulder, a small camera kind of strapped to the upper part of their arm, and they walk down the aisle to the grocery store. And as they're walking down the aisle to the grocery store, this camera is just taking pictures in rapid succession of the shelves. And within a few minutes, it sends a report to the store manager that says, these products are out of stock on the shelf. Have somebody go and pull that stuff.
Wow.
So the stocking happens. And it happens that quickly. It's a mobile application, but it's not something that, you know, traditionally that we would think of as, you know, it wouldn't pop to our minds. It's like, boy, that would be a cool use for mobility.
Right.
So that video image recognition, I think you're going to see a lot there. This Internet of Things, the connectivity between devices, I think we're going to see quite a bit there. You know, imagine the same building engineer going down into the basement and just connecting his phone via Bluetooth to, you know, whatever piece of equipment is down in the basement or up on the roof, and, you know, getting all the readings that way, just having a health check done by connecting his phone via Bluetooth to that device, or even, you know, having a device that might be in another building, a piece of equipment in another building, alert his phone because it's gone out of tolerance somewhere. So the connectivity between machines and between devices, I think, is going to have a lot of application, a lot of impact on what happens with mobile. And then the other area is this context-aware topic. So your phone, because it has a microphone and it has a camera and it has a GPS sensor in it, it knows a lot. It can tell where you are, what's going on around you, and there's some really interesting research that's going on right now around what are all the things a phone, you know, a person has eyes and ears and they know where they are. Well, a phone basically has eyes and ears and knows where it is. So all that context where a user doesn't have to enter that data into the application, but the phone picks it all up itself and adds it and embellishes the information either while you're reporting. You might just, you know, mash a button on your phone screen that says there's a problem. And the phone fills in, oh, there's a problem in room number XYZ, you know, of building number, you know, XYZ, and fills in that information for you. So context-aware applications, I think, is another area we're going to see quite a bit happening. As far as the technology itself, the phones themselves, they're just going to get faster. I don't think the shape of the phone, you know, there's been a lot of experimenting with that, but I don't think in the next few years we're going to see much change in the actual look and feel of the phone itself. But what it can do, I think is going to continue to accelerate.
That's great. Anything related to battery life, which you talked about earlier? Do you see anything, any kind of technology advances there?
That's kind of the holy grail. So what's made it a little bit easier is maybe less the battery technology itself, but the phone, since the phones have been getting bigger, the batteries can get bigger. So battery life in some of these larger phones is much better. There's a new, I think it's the LG G6 that's coming out in a couple of months. It's a very large phone. It's made with some very lightweight materials, and what they're doing with the weight that they're saving is, you know, putting a bigger battery. There's a tremendous amount of research going on with battery to try and make them smaller and more powerful.
Right.
But short of that, it make them bigger without letting the user know that the battery is
bigger. And adding weight, right.
And, you know, on that topic, something you've probably seen really just in the last few months more than ever before is these little handheld things. They're the size of a Pez dispenser, really. And it's a portable battery. You plug your phone into that when your phone battery dies. You don't have to find an outlet in the wall, or you don't have to plug it into your car.
Right.
Plug it into one of these little things. And it gives you an extra few hours. That's an innovation that, you know, it's one of those things that it fills a problem right now. When battery technology gets better, all those guys will go out of business.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that business. You don't want to be in the device business.
No.
In general. Right. How about wearables? Apple Watch, obviously, a big splash last month. Still early, a novelty, or do you see that kind of working its way into the enterprise down the road?
Yeah, the watch itself, I see as still being a bit of a novelty. You know, just like with phones themselves and smartphones, you know, consumers accept and adopt them first, and then they make their way into the enterprise. And there's still, the jury's still kind of out on watches and whether or not they have enough value. I think what is going to happen is prices will come down. You know, right now a watch is an extension of a phone, kind of like a phone is becoming an extension of your desktop. So you still need the phone in your pocket to run the application that's running on the watch for the most part. And, you know, right now, we have to wait to see exactly how well this Apple Watch is going to be adopted. And last count, I think there were 5 million pre-orders for it. So it looks like it's off to a good start. But Android watches have been out for a number of years, and really the only adopters of them have been, you know, really geeky people, for one. And, you know, I won't admit how many Android watches we have in my family. And then athletes, right, people using them, cyclists and runners. There's a lot of watches in that space, but that's a very small niche. Wearables themselves, though, besides watches, have actually been around for a while. I worked on projects probably 15 years ago where people were wearing barcode scanners on their fingertips or headsets for voice-controlled applications while they're doing picking in a warehouse. So the idea of wearables in the enterprise or in commercial applications has been around for a while, but I think these other ones that we're talking about, Google Glasses, for example, still very much a novelty, in fact, to a point where people kind of put the brakes on that for a while. Mm-hmm. And the watches, same kind of thing. In the enterprise, I think there's still a bit of a novelty. Still, you know, I'm not going to outfit my 50 building engineers with a $300 Apple Watch because they can get a message on it instead of looking at their phone face.
Right. Although they'll ask for it, but you don't have to say no.
All kinds of great excuses for getting one of those.
Exactly. Well, excuse me. We'll edit that out. Matt, some really terrific insights here, and you've already provided us with a bunch of things to think about, but maybe in conclusion, if you could wrap it up with 3 to 5 things or questions you would advise a CIO or senior executive that they should be asking of a provider when evaluating mobile applications and the issues for their organization.
Yeah, I think we've touched on, you know, a lot of the things that people should be thinking about, but, you know, you can never say enough about security.
Yeah.
So that would probably be the first question out of that. How do you make sure that my data is safe? You know, are you encrypting data? Where are you encrypting it? What kind of passwords do we have? You know, what are the different security management pieces of the overall application? That's probably the number one thing to ask about. And then number two is, you know, there was this concept of vendor lock-in. So, you know, if you look at 3-4 years ago, everybody in business had a BlackBerry. And today, you know, I don't know what the percentage is in each individual industry, but it's pretty hard to find a BlackBerry in a business meeting anymore compared to an iPhone. So people that locked themselves into applications that only ran on BlackBerries, they're getting a lot of pressure from people, and it can cause a problem. So a question would be, you know, what are you doing to make sure that if I want to change platform to, you know, either another known platform today, Windows Mobile might come to mind, or Windows Phones, because they do exist, and, you know, they may rise back up in a year or two, you never know, or to some unknown platform. What are you doing to protect the software so that I can migrate it easily?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said earlier, kind of look at things from the end user perspective, the mobile user, the mobile worker. I'm a big fan of the end user. I'm a big fan of doing things that make adoption of mobile tools very strong. So I would ask about what the company does to make sure that the software is very easy to use and very intuitive. What kind of usability testing do they do? How do they solicit feedback from current users? What do they do with new features before they come out to make sure that when they do come out, they're going to be usable and it's not going to drive up my support and training costs? So probably those three things, platform, security, and usability are issues that probe on pretty hard.
That was a great, great takeaways and great guidance for anybody looking at mobile applications. Well, just terrific stuff. It's an exciting time. I'm glad to hear that there's more great things coming down the line. We know firsthand about the impact it's had on our business and mobility and all the great work we did with you. So thanks again, Matt. Wish you all the best with Repsley. You will find contact information for Matt and Repsley on our podcast page, along, as always, with the transcript. And the downloadable takeaway for this broadcast. And that brings us to the conclusion of this episode of CRE Tech Talks. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you continue to listen in.
Thank you again for listening to this broadcast of CRE Tech Talks. We hope you found today's session valuable. Remember to visit our podcast page at www.buildingengines.com/CRE Tech Talks to download today's transcript and key takeaways, as well as listen to other sessions and share with colleagues. We'll see you next time on CRE Tech Talks.